Hello, I'm PharmaForum Deep Dive Editor Eloise McLennan, and on this podcast for Kudos in 2023, I'm joined by Erin Cooper, who is winner of this year's Outstanding Physiotherapist Kudos Recognition Award. Hello, Erin.
Hi there.
So first things first, how does it feel to be recognised for your work by the Kudos and MS programme?
Oh, it feels so good. I suppose, like of any of us, it's really great to get recognition for the job that you do, and also to highlight pelvic health physiotherapy in such a big way within the MS community.
So before we move on to what you've been nominated for, can we describe the unmet need that you found before you started the work?
Yeah, so patients with MS are more likely to develop pelvic health complications such as bladder and bowel dysfunction. Within sort of the MS service in my trust, really what they were initially thinking of was to have a continence nurse. But Siobhan McCauley, who is one of our clinical specialist neurologists in physiotherapy, she really championed for pelvic health. And I suppose like the unmet need is that sometimes pelvic health, although people know we exist, they don't really know what we do. So she championed us and we had meetings with the neurology team and they decided to go forward with a pelvic health physiotherapy role rather than continence service role. There is crossover obviously between both services and we already have an established continence service within our trust, but there was no dedicated pelvic health team. So with regards to pelvic health, our team already was seeing, I suppose, the odd patient who had a neurological condition because maybe they'd been to their GP and been referred, but there was never really any dedicated pathway for neurology to send patients to us. I suppose whenever I started my role, I think a lot of the consultants realized like maybe the questions that they were asking were maybe not as in-depth as what the patients required. I suppose pelvic health and bladder and bowel, especially as people say in the UK, we're quite sort of, we don't talk about things like that. And we tend to shy away from it until it sort of gets to the point where it's something that we aren't able to, I suppose, cover up or manage. And it's usually at that sort of breaking point that we ask for help. And what we wanted to do was try and get in there first, I suppose, educate the patients and make them aware of their pelvic health. Yeah, I know before that, I suppose it gets to a sort of a point where it's harder to treat.
And how have you addressed that through your work? So can you give me specifics, for examples of what you've done to help meet that need?
Yeah, so with regards to sort of my clinic, initially I've set up a pathway for the MS team. So because it's a dedicated MS service, I only see MS patients. So it's, I suppose I had to go in and educate the neurologists. I had to go in and educate the MS nursing staff. And I suppose also the neurology physiotherapists as well, because they're able to refer in to me. So although we sort of all know like about our pelvic floors, they maybe didn't realize that there was a service there first. So I had to research in and around everything so that I could give people all this most up-to-date sort of knowledge that we have in pelvic health regarding MS, and also set up that pathway so that patients could start to be referred in. I suppose set up that service from scratch and also learn about MS more myself.
And what challenges have you encountered in doing this, and how did you react to them?
Probably the biggest challenge was COVID hit in March 2020. And that was, I literally think I interviewed for my job about 2 months previously. So when my job would have been starting, COVID started. And I didn't start that post until July of 2020 then. So initially that post, I suppose what was really thought of what we would do is that I would almost have a clinic so that when people come in to see the neurologist could send them to me. I could have a chat with them. I could see what they needed. I could set up their initial appointment and then that would start the ball rolling. Obviously COVID, we weren't seeing people face to face. So instead of being a face to face service, we had to completely change it. So everything went on to sort of telephone assessments, advice over the phone. I think COVID for a lot of us made us realize that actually we can adapt when we want to, but it was probably one of the biggest changes. Like it was like overnight, we all had to adapt and change our services. I suppose with that, we learned how resilient we all were. Also at that point of time, I also was pregnant. So I had to go off shielding at 28 weeks, which was a month and a half into my role, and also then was on maternity leave. While I was shielding, I was working still the same amount and I was doing lots of everything was over the phone. So I went home and I had to adapt on, I suppose, like not having someone there in the room next to me to ask them questions or to get some advice. So very quickly, I sort of realized how much work and how much I could do on my own. So it was really good for my confidence. Then also, obviously, when I was on maternity leave, Nikki, who is on the award with me, Nikki took over for those 11 months while I was off on maternity leave. She's done a really great job of holding the service together. Because obviously, 2 months in, going on to maternity leave, I suppose that's when the service could have sort of fallen down around us. Because it was a pilot service, we were scoping. We were trying to prove that patients needed us and that they wanted us and that there was that unmet need.
And I suppose talking about patients, what was the result for your MS patients and for their families?
Yeah, so when we done a feedback questionnaire, we got initially, as you know, like sometimes when you send those things, people don't tend to reply to them. But we got 100% feedback of that they felt it was a beneficial service to have. 96% people said that they would recommend it to others. We got sort of like our blurbs would be that it was a great service. We were very sensitive to the topic that we were discussing. And one of our patients said it made a great difference to their confidence in dealing with their pelvic health condition. So like the feedback has always been quite good. I suppose it's more like now that I see everyone face to face again, it's more that they'll tell me to my face. So I don't always get that in a written form, which is sometimes hard. And we do sort of send out like a questionnaire to people, but they don't always send it back.
It's amazing that you got such good responses from those you were working with.
Yeah.
So moving forward now you are back to face to face. How do you see work in this area developing moving forward?
Last year, we got made permanent, which is great. And I'm staying in the post. And I suppose what we sort of realized was that like my post is a band 7 post. Pelvic health, as you advance, band 7s are the ones that see the more complex patients. And there's a few, Nikki, who took over while I was on maternity leave, and also one of my other colleagues, they had an interest in sort of maybe starting to see the MS patients. And we thought for the benefit of our patients and our service, that obviously, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with regards to like sick leave or the future or someone leaving the service. So we sort of wanted to set up the service so that there was always sort of a fallback. So they're now starting to see some of the patients as well. And I've trained them in sort of MS and what to expect. And I'm always there for them to come back and get some feedback. And patients now have earlier input, you know, so their pelvic health conditions are getting seen earlier and they're getting addressed earlier. So hopefully they can manage that for longer and for more independence in the future. And it is a dedicated service that I have asked around the sort of pelvic health community, and there doesn't seem to be any sort of pelvic health MS service anywhere else in the UK. So I really am sort of pioneering that at the minute. In the future, I suppose what I would sort of hope is that I see lots of patients, and every patient is different and every patient is individual, and they all need an individual sort of treatment plan and input. But some of them have retention of their bladder whenever I do a bladder scan. And at the minute I have to, then I'm not trained in intermittent self-catheterizing. So I have to refer them to the continence team to do that. But there's a really long waiting list, as there is where everywhere at the minute. So my next stage would be that I want to go and do some ISC training and hopefully develop my service that way to give a patient sort of one journey. And then I suppose in the future, it would be like scoping into other conditions. So like other neurological conditions have pelvic health concerns as well. So if you look at like Parkinson's disease, they think that sort of bile and constipation symptoms are really prevalent in Parkinson's, and they more likely to have a slow transit. And that 30 to 70% of those patients will develop urinary incontinence as well in their lifetime. And then if you think of like stroke patients, on a study by Thomas et al, 15% of patients 1 year after their stroke still had urinary incontinence issues from initial sort of stroke and diagnosis. So we can move that way and we can grow the service in that way.
I think for me, the big point that you just said, it will stick with me, I think, going away from this, is giving patients that one journey. And I think that's definitely something that we've seen recognized across healthcare at the moment. But in terms of how we replicate this moving forward, what advice would you give to other teams thinking about implementing something like this?
I think the big thing is look at your area, look and see what other people are doing. Like, you know, obviously, like the continence service has always been there. Pelvic health has always been there. We have a crossover. But I suppose it's looking at, is there anyone seeing any neurology patients? is there already sort of a service, but it hasn't been really dedicated just to that? You know, research around what's currently happening, scope, see, is there a need? Can you fulfill that unmet need? Can you go and speak to the neurologist? Can you create a business case showing why you need to be there and see if they will hopefully fund it, even if it is for a pilot? You know, I started off as a pilot. We were told it would be 18 months and I'm still here coming up to 3 years later with, I think, roughly just under 300 patients were seen the last time I checked. So 300 patients have been referred into one person.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, and it's not even a full-time post. So if you think like how difficult that is to try and fit everyone in.
I think that's something that everyone's finding at the moment, is there are not enough hours in the day.
No, but we do what we can. And I think the thing is, it's just always focusing on the service user. Like it's what do they want and how can we help them achieve that?
I think that is an amazing point to end on. What do patients need and how can we help?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Erin. Congratulations on your recognition. Join us in our next series of interviews with QDOS winners, where we'll be discussing other projects helping MS patients across the nation.